Hello, it's Fern here, popping in quickly before the show because I really want to hear from you. I am forever grateful to you every single time you press play on an episode of Happy Place. And this show really is for you. So in the interest of doing more stuff that you love and less of the stuff you're not bothered by, I would love it if you took a couple of minutes to fill out a little survey for me. The link will be in the show notes. Your input on the content and the format and the guests and all those types of things is so important to help me and the Happy Place team shape the future of Happy Place. So just click on the link in the show notes to share all your thoughts and musings. I appreciate you loads. A quick warning before we start this week's episode. This one does contain a couple of references to sexual violence. So some of you might want to hold on to this one for a time you feel a bit stronger. Hello and welcome to Happy Place. I'm Fern Cotton and today I meet someone really very special. Her name is Grace Graham.
She said, you know, it's all about the power of the mind. If you tell somebody that they're going to be okay, they will be okay. And I remember her saying that, and I remember it about probably the age of 11, going around to my dad's house and he was sat in his chair, and I thought, I'm going to get him out of the chair, I'm going to get him to look in the mirror and say, I will be well.
Grace is special for a number of reasons. She started her own successful business against incredible personal odds, but also for her work for the Prince's Trust. Now, if you've not heard of the Prince's Trust, let me enlighten you. They are an amazing charity that instills self-belief in people aged 11 to 30 years old so they can be their best selves and fulfill their potential. They help in getting people jobs or training opportunities, offer mentoring and build self-esteem. So important. Now, I've just had the honour of becoming a Goodwill Ambassador for the Prince's Trust, which is a wonderful privilege. And the role comes with a special interest in the mental health and well-being of people like Grace. And today we have a little surprise for her because Grace is to be given a national award to recognise the work she's done. It's called the Mappin & Webb Young Ambassador Award, and she has picked many, many others around the country for the prize.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So look, let's get on with the show and let's tell her the great news. I'm about to walk through the doors of the Prince's Trust offices. One of the best things for me about being a Prince's Trust ambassador is meeting the young people that have been helped by the Trust. And I'm going to meet someone today who's not only been helped, but has gone on to absolutely thrive, start up an incredible business that she completely devised on her own, and is helping loads of people in turn, which is a complete joy. So I can't wait to meet her and hear her story today. To explain how remarkable Grace is, it makes sense to hear what she's overcome. And Grace's early years were very, very challenging.
So my father had Parkinson's disease, spent a lot of time with my dad. So my parents are separated by the time I was born. But I spent most weekends with my father and his wonderful wife, who's my stepmom, who I'm very close with still today. So as a child, you know, you're kind of unaware of really what is going on. And I think children have such an amazing resilience. So you just get on with it and it's a part of your normality. So he deteriorated as I got older. So my memories of going around to see my father would be to feed him. And, you know, he was on a lot of medication in order to kind of survive the Parkinson's disease. So he'd be in and out of kind of docile sleeps. However, he was such a dignified man. So my stepmom later on told me that he would overdose on his medication in order to be stronger for when we arrived, so that he was able to walk to the door and answer the door. So I was probably unaware of the pain at that time, but there was always that underlying subconscious that one day he was going to die and not never know when that would be, but it was going to happen sooner than probably bearable than was bearable.
Well, you were a kid still, you were 15.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's such a lot to take on and to digest. How did that impact you at that age?
So, you know, I think for a long time I believed, which is something that played through relationships later on in my life, is that he didn't love me. So that when I would take my school reports round, you know, I had all of these kind of expectations, as you do as a child. And I remember seeing kind of dads walking around with their children or doing active things and feeling that yearning for why I don't have this. And I remember taking my school reports round to him, and he would be kind of in and out of being able to really concentrate. Yeah. And so for me at the age of 10, I just thought, you're not interested, so that must mean you don't love me. And so, you know, that kind of played out in many ways, because if my father doesn't love me, then how can I love myself? And so that led me to be in quite difficult relationships, or attract quite negative situations where I was yearning for older men that were, in a sense, looking for a father figure that were very unstable or unwell. So I kind of was repeating the pattern of what I'd kind of been raised with.
It's very interesting that, I guess, at this point in your life, you're able to look back and actually process that and figure it out. Because, of course, at 15, you don't understand those feelings, those mixed emotions. So how did you sort of cope with all of those feelings and that sense of lacking at that age?
Yeah, I think I was very angry. So when he died, I was just angry and kind of really upset with the world. You know, I've always had a belief, throughout some of the traumas that I've experienced, I've gained such a strong understanding of a higher power, and whatever you may call that, you know, to me that is God. And I have that faith, you know, which has carried me through. But at that time, I was very angry with God. And I remember having conversations just saying, where are you? And why are you doing this to me? You know? And so that kind of played out through addiction. So I turned to alcohol and later turned to drugs. That was a way of me numbing the pain, which I did up until I'll be 2 years sober in April.
Oh, that is phenomenal, Grace.
Yes.
That takes so much strength to do that as well. You know, like yourself, so many people have found themselves in that situation of being in unbearable pain, not being able to make sense of a situation and looking for that escapism.
Yeah.
And that can fall into so many different areas of addiction.
Exactly.
And for you, that started off as alcohol.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to say that you've dealt with way more than just your father passing away. Not long after, you were forced to leave home because of something horrendous that happened to you. I know that this is a really difficult thing for you to talk about, but if you feel like you can, then please do.
Yeah, I'm happy to. After losing my father, I was definitely in a very vulnerable place. And shortly after that, a few years later, I was 17 years old, and I met somebody, and it quickly turned into, it was a lot older than me. In a sense, you could say I was groomed, but it turned into a very difficult and dangerous situation. And I was beaten up very badly and raped. And that went on for about 3 months until, you know, I was silenced because of the fear of it. You know, there were a lot of things that were, I was mentally and physically abused. So I kept it quiet from the family, in a sense, to protect, you know, my mum, because of the threats that were told to me if I said anything. And eventually my family worked out that something wasn't right. You know, my behaviour wasn't right. I'd lost weight and people noticed bruises. So we kind of collectively, my mum was unaware, but when we made her aware, it was the decision that I had to leave the area in order to be safe, really. So I moved away for about a year. And at the time, so my mum is a very kind of strong woman and really believes in the importance of education. And she used to always say to me, never play the victim. And I used to think, how dare you? I am a victim. But the reality is that is what carried me through, you know? And I think we are all victims of circumstance. But to be a victim is a very weak state. And even though I found it very difficult, that kind of brutal truth, that reality of what she said kind of got me through my situation. So anyway, I had to leave the area and I travelled down while in hiding to sixth form because she was, you know, adamant that I must go to university. So I would travel down and I completed my A-levels and got into Bristol University.
Which is phenomenal before you carry on. Like that is, to get into university is tough enough as it is, but with what you'd endured up to that point of your life to... Yeah. And I know that your mum's saying something to you that's really had that impact. And, you know, when our mums talk to us, it often does have that like deep-rooted, oh, my, I have to follow this through. But I'm still so fascinated in how you found that strength, even to move away. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you've always been born with that sort of inner strength? You're a fighter or faith?
I do think so. I think that naturally... innately, I've always had quite an ability to care for other people and a strength to kind of, I mean, you could call it a strength, but to look at both sides of kind of the coin. And I think that did save me. But I think also the brain's such a powerful thing that when you go through traumas, it has an ability to completely cut off the emotions from those traumas in order for you to survive the situation. I think if I had felt the actual intensity of those experiences at the time, I may not be here today. So it was, I almost had to, and with kind of those, the mantras or the things that I was told by my mother, that kind of drove me to kind of continue. And having not felt any of what I was going through, almost I survived it. And it's taken me up till today. You know, I have therapy today where I'm now going back to talk about the rape and about to connect the feelings to it. Because my father once said to me, just before he died, actually, that you are my strongest soldier. And at the time, those words did me a great justice, but also had a huge effect on me later on in life. Because as a 11, 12 year old, if somebody says you're a soldier, you take that literally. You stand up tall, you know, you don't show any emotion. To show emotion is weak, isn't it?
And you don't want to let him down because he's given you that responsibility.
Exactly. So to me, I look at that almost as a message, in a sense, from a higher power, that he knew in his passing that there were going to be some things that I was going to face. Yeah. And so by telling me that, I was able to be a soldier, literally, and survive that. But later on, is sometimes words are very powerful, but can sometimes be a hindrance if we continue to use them when we don't need them anymore. Yeah. And so I continued to do that. And so I kind of went through life with kind of a bit of like a bull in a china shop, not feeling anything. And that had a detriment effect. And almost the drink and the drugs enabled me to have this time where I could feel, but still with quite a disconnect.
Yeah, there was a sense of numbing for you.
And yeah, exactly.
God, like, you know, it's awful that you had to endure any of this. And I don't know anyone that would be able to just be present in that and feel all those feelings in one big influx, because it's so much to handle.
Yeah.
And was there a moment much later down the line or even more recently where you've had to sort of feel all those feelings in one big go? Or has it been a sort of incremental thing of you learning how to process your past?
So I bumped into the person who had raped me about nearly 3 years ago now. And not to cut you, but it kind of relates to back to what you were saying. I remember seeing the person anyway, and they kind of walked past me as if I wasn't there. And I remember thinking, for 10 years it was never spoken about. So we just all got on with it as a family. And I think that was our survival. So it was never mentioned. So I pushed it really, really deep. It was almost as if it had never happened to me. And I remember looking at him and actually thinking, look at me, please recognise me, what you've done. And he just walked past me as if I wasn't there. And I remember going to sleep that night and having recurring dreams. And I said, that's it, I can't do this to myself anymore. So I woke up and called the police and said, I want to report a rape case, or a rape crime, or a rape case. And so they came round, and it took us a year to go to Crown Court. And during that time, I had a breakdown, because it was the first time that I told my story to a police officer. And I had to acknowledge, it was just very weird. I would get messages from a police officer. I had an amazing woman that supported me through the journey. And she would message me saying, these are his bail conditions. You know, we're hoping that we're going to get to court. You know, all of these messages. And I looked at these messages and thought, this actually happened to me.
Yeah, you'd made it sort of not true.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
A fantasy sort of story that you just literally were like, that didn't happen. It's a weird little bubble over here. I'm not dealing with it. And then I guess seeing it in black and white, in writing, that is a reality that you're having to then, you know, have that sort of interaction with somebody.
Exactly.
And again, the strength it takes to do that is remarkable. I'm completely in awe of how
you.
you know, deep you had to dig to summon that sort of energy to take such a person on.
Yeah, it was hard. But, you know, I believe that we're all here for a reason and everybody has a testimony, you know. And I think I didn't want my legacy to be the girl that had overdosed and was found dead because she was raped or because she lost her boyfriend or because she lost her father. I didn't want that to be my story. And I knew that. And I think it's also very egotistical to believe that I did it all myself. And that's where my belief in my higher power comes in, or my father, my, you know, the spirits that guided me along the way that helped me get through it. You know, I didn't do it by myself, and I know that. But there was definitely something within me that knew that, you know, I couldn't continue my life the way that I was. And it was amazing people like Louise Hay. I remember picking up her book during the lead up to my court case. And, you know, I didn't love myself, and I didn't think I was worthy of much at that time. But I knew that I made a decision to do something. And a lot of people saying, are you sure? But I just had this unwavering belief that, you know, this is something that I have to do, irrespective to how hard it's going to be.
And he was put in prison.
He was sentenced to 13 years, yeah, in prison.
And how did that, the sort of end of that section of your life, because I guess that was a more definite end to that chapter, and you'd be able to sort of really then process it and put it to one side.
Yeah.
How did you feel at that point?
I mean, I was on kind of after cloud nine, you know, life is perfect now. I've done this. That means that everything is going to be okay. I was kind of in this naive kind of bubble that now that he was locked away, there was nothing else that I needed to feel. And I was safe, but I was also done emotionally. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of quite like that, right? This is, you know, we've dealt with it, so it's finished.
Yeah.
Rather than things take time and there's a process to things and things can take years to heal. But at the time, I didn't want to kind of believe that. It was just done. And so I drove my family crazy, you know, whenever they got a bit, let's talk about things. No, you just need to do an affirmation and you'll be fine.
And that's a really nice way of thinking about it.
I think so. But at the time, it drove them absolutely mad. My mum was like, you know, darling, you did so well after the court case, but you did drive us all a little bit crazy with your positive affirmations from Louise Hay.
I think, again, that's remarkable. Like, I don't know if I would be anywhere near as positive as that. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, but I just wanted everyone to jump on the bandwagon.
Of course.
And of course, not everybody's, you know, we're all in different places, right? On different journeys. So anyway, I thought after that I would stop escaping. I thought I would stop drinking. I thought I would stop using drugs, and that didn't happen. And it actually got worse, you know. And so it was then that I realised that this is greater than me. And now this is what I really need to focus on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So just going back a bit, again, it is just unbelievable to say that you had to endure even more pain and suffering, because before he was imprisoned and before you'd taken him to court, as you said, you'd started at Bristol University.
Yes.
And what were you studying there?
Social policy and sociology.
Okay, and that was a happy time, would you say, of your life? Still confusing time, perhaps?
Yeah, and difficult. So I left the area and, you know, we finally decided that it was time for me to move back home. And at the time, I met a wonderful young man, my boyfriend at the time, and he was very supportive through that process because it was very difficult. You know, I was still young, and telling any man that you've experienced that, it's difficult, you know? And I was still very scared to walk in certain areas and stuff like that. And so he was just remarkable, such a wonderful man. And, you know, growing up in Hackney at the time that I did, it was quite a deprived area, and not the coffee shop and pastry shops that it is today.
Gentrified,
you know?
Glory of Hackney.
Yeah, and I mean, it's lovely, but it was very different when I was young. And, you know, it was a high gun crime rate, etc. And so during my first year at university, he was murdered. He was shot dead for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know. So that was absolutely devastating.
It's all right. It takes some time.
Still makes me emotional today.
Well, of course it does. I mean, that is something you cannot prepare for.
No.
You can't expect that. You can't get ready for
it.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Just a horrendous, horrendous, awful bad luck.
Yeah, and you know, even having an emotion now for me, my therapist would be so proud. She's like, you're balancing your masculine and feminine energy. So I'm getting there. Because before I wouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
I would just talk about it as if it wasn't my story.
Yeah.
And so that's a joy within itself, being able to shed a tear or feel a bit emotional, you know. It's important.
It's
because
so,
we're human.
It's,
you know,
so important. After having to go through all that,
yeah,
after what you'd previously injured, how do you even walk out the door? How do you trust that life is going to be
okay
in any way?
It's difficult, you know, and I think it is, you know, Louise Hay did save me in so many ways. You know, I would look in front of the mirror leading up to the court case every day and say, I love you, Grace, I really do. I accept you as you are. And I didn't believe that. I didn't believe that. And I've only started to believe that within the last kind of 18 months. But the power of words, you know, and it's like the self-fulfilling prophecy. If you keep telling yourself something, eventually your brain will catch up and say, well, hang on, she loves herself, so maybe she does, you know. And eventually you kind of, it's like fake it till you make it, isn't it? And having a faith, and you know, the program in recovery has really helped me to kind of really dig deep and to really understand that, you know, there's something out there that's always looking after you, you know.
You know, when you're in that place of despair, which I'm imagining you're in that place, even when you're reading positive literature, or you're hearing a positive story, or someone saying it's going to be okay, how do you believe that when you've experienced the absolute opposite of that?
I was always drawn to, so, you know, I've always been in love with Oprah, and I always used to watch her on TV from a young age. And
same.
Yeah, obsessed.
Obsessed.
Obsessed. And I remember one thing before I went to see, this is when my father was still alive. She said, you know, it's all about the power of the mind. If you tell somebody that they're going to be okay, they will be okay. And I remember her saying that, and I remember it about probably the age of 11, going around to my dad's house and say, and he was sat in his chair, and I thought, I'm going to get him out of the chair. I'm going to get him to look in the mirror and say, I will be well. You know, and I couldn't do it at the time. I just couldn't do it. But I remember looking back on that and thinking, had I have done that, maybe he would still be alive. You know, it's funny little things like that. But I had this really strong belief that there is a power to change things, no matter how bad it gets. But it did get really bad. I mean, it got really bad. You know, my addiction really nearly destroyed my life. So things did get very bad. But I think having that kind of underline knowing that it can't always be like this, you know, something has to change.
So what was the sort of seminal turning point where you went, you know what, I've had to suffer a lot, and I know that I am numbing a lot through drugs and alcohol, but enough is enough. How did that moment occur?
So I stopped working leading up to the court case. I had to, and you know, I had a breakdown. I kind of lost everything, my friends, you know, my job, and I had to be by myself. And I, you know, there's a saying, you know, God can't give you anything if your hands are too full. And I think everything had to be stripped away, and that happened literally. And so I was sat with myself. And
what did that feel like?
And it was just, you know, I was indoors a lot by myself leading up to the court case. I mean, I was still unfortunately using at the time, but I really had to get to know myself. What do you like, Grace? And actually, who are you, stripped bare of the labels, the perceptions, you know, who are you? And I asked myself those questions, and I just spent time with myself, you know, and eventually I started to get a sense of awareness of what I don't want in my life.
I think it's so important, because I think we are, whether you've suffered extreme trauma or not, I think the majority of us are awful at doing this, sitting with not only ourselves but an emotion. You know,
exactly.
I know that if I've got something that's brewing or bubbling and I think, oh, I don't want to think about that, whatever, I will, you know, clean my kitchen surface till they're like, see my face in them, or I'll, you know, go on the internet and be researching something or anything to deal with that.
Exactly.
And to sit with a feeling or a backstory is excruciating at times. So how did you kind of work through that process, and how long would you say, or are you still in that process
now? Yeah, I'd definitely say I'm still in the process. You know, I've dedicate myself to having regular therapy, and I've had a therapist who I've seen off and on for over 4 years, and we're now starting to do work around feelings and emotions, and you know, I do my spiritual practices, so I'll get up and do some 10 minutes mindfulness in the morning, and exercises and stretches, and I listen to a lot of kind of repetitive mantras. My goddaughter thinks I'm crazy. She's like, what are you listening to again? I'm like, guys,
that's good,
just
by osmosis,
they're
going to her as well. It's fantastic.
So all of those little things, I think, combined, you know, have an ability to eventually, it's like drip feeding yourself, isn't it, until it becomes kind of your normality or your mantra.
So when you first started to have to sit with yourself with, as you say, all of those normalities stripped away, what emotions were coming up, and how did you feel about yourself at that time?
To be honest, it was quite hard to really know, because I was still in active addiction, so I was still numb in the pain. Yeah. Although I was on the process of healing, you could say, it, you know, when you're numb in the pain, you're not really healing, you know, properly. So it was after the court case I made a decision to go to rehab. And that, before that, I'd come to the Prince's Trust. I'd found out about the Prince's Trust.
And how did you hear about them?
So a friend of mine had set up a business before and just told me about how amazing they were. And I, so at the time I'd stopped working, but I fell back on my massage diploma. So I, when I finished university, I did a diploma in holistic massage. And so I needed to figure out a way to pay my bills. So I thought I'll fall back on that, and just joined lots of different agencies and thought I could probably do something similar myself. So I came to the Prince's Trust, and it was when I came to the Prince's Trust, I thought, you know what, I really need to now start taking my life a lot more seriously. And it is about responsibility. I have to stop harming myself. You know, I've been through these traumatic experiences, but now it's a choice for me to say that is over. And so I checked into rehab and I went away for a month, and that has enabled me really to kind of just take time to feel and get to know myself, and actually give my business and give my business the best I can.
And once you managed to stop using and drinking, how did it feel to be Grace, knowing all that had happened and all that you'd been through? How did you feel about life at that point?
Yeah, difficult. And I had very low moments, you know, where it was like, I thought, this is it. So I've put down the drink and drugs and I can't get out of bed. You know, I thought there was this going to be this epiphany and everything was going to be, again, just after the court case, amazing, but that's not life. And you know, there were times where I'd message my sponsor and say, I just can't get out of bed, or I felt suicidal, you know. Because I just, it's again, it's our expectations. I thought that as soon as I'd stop using it, everything would be perfect. But actually, it was a part in my life now where it was time to feel the feelings and the reality of the past. So it was quite scary.
Yeah, I mean, again, you have to find that insane amount of inner strength to go, I'm gonna do this. Yeah. I'm gonna get through it.
Yeah.
So massive turning point. Getting in touch with Prince's Trust. You knew you wanted to do something with your massage diploma.
Yeah.
How did the idea come about for your now thriving business?
So I, my business works for, the Prince's Trust have been just incredible. So I've always had a passion for kind of holistic services and for massage and the healing qualities it can bring to people's lives. And made a huge difference for me. And from a young age, I was always quite tactile. So I remember being with my dad and I'd play with his hands, in a sense, massage his hands to help kind of reduce the tension from the medication. Kind of unaware that later on this would be something that would be like my destiny.
How fascinating. Yeah. That was already
So I was always very good with my hands. Mm. And I joined lots of different agencies and started massaging. And I had a few opportunities to go into kind of offices. And that's when I realised that there was an opportunity really to support employees' well-being at work.
Yeah, sat at desks all day, feeling extreme tension from work.
Exactly.
Wow. And so the Prince's Trust were like, we can absolutely help you here.
Yeah.
Let's work together.
Yeah. So I went on the Enterprise Program, which is like a year's program, but you do a 4-day training just to kind of tell you about the ins and outs of business. And after you've completed that, you go to panel. So they'll look at your business plan and see if your business is viable. And I was given an amazing mentor, Chris Letcher, who supports me kind of with just different aspects of the business, you know, kind of getting clients, how to sell. But yeah, but WorkSpa came about with kind of the support through the transition of coming to the trust. We kind of decided that we wanted to turn it into a corporate wellbeing company.
That you have?
Yes, and now
we
have.
And you work with huge companies offering your services.
Yeah, so working with organisations such as HSBC and Fujitsu. I've been very fortunate as my role as ambassador. So I speak about my story at different events and then I turn those into, I mean, they're massive networking opportunities. So I've managed to turn a lot of the people into clients.
Because what I love about what you're doing is, you know, there are so many, everybody out there listening to this will be somebody like myself, like yourself, yeah. who rushes around
exactly.
like a headless chicken a lot of the time, trying to do too much, mm-hmm. feeling in that fight and flight mode
exactly.
that we often don't need to be in if it is just something like I'm late to pick up the kids or whatever, but
yeah.
you're in that
panic,
absolute panic. Mm-hmm. And you've really understood that power of physical touch and relaxation.
Exactly.
Do you think we all sort of underestimate how powerful that can be?
Yeah, definitely. I think especially in Western society, we're with our babies, of course, and as a mother, you know, you're nurturing and touch is a very normal thing. But it's like as we get older, touch becomes something that we do less in a nurturing way, you know? And I mean, massage in general anyway, it's just relaxing the body, you know, increases your serotonin levels and it's such a healthy thing to do. And I think in this day and age, especially with technology, it's so hard to separate yourself from work, you know. And so creating that work-life balance can be extremely difficult. So I think bringing holistic services into the workplace just helps companies and employees to kind of have that respite while they're at work, and then the physical demands of sitting in the same position for so many hours, you know, the postural demands of that.
It's such an amazing idea.
That's how to alleviate that too.
It's incredible. And you've got big plans to sort of really start looking at well-being,
yes,
mental and physical
exactly.
well-being in the workplace.
Exactly.
So what are your future plans?
So we've got I've got some practitioners now that are delivering mindfulness and yoga sessions as well.
Wow.
And we're looking at incorporating some form of CBT, so cognitive behavioural therapy, training for management, HR, and for employees as well.
Wow, I mean, that is incredible. Specifically with sort of looking at mental health,
yes,
mental well-being,
yes.
I mean, I have therapy. Have you found talk therapy specifically important to your well-being and how you go about your business?
100%, extremely important. You know, I think for me that one of the biggest... the thing that saved me, I think, the Prince's Trust, it was giving me that platform to speak and to share my message, you know. And I think there's a power in the truth really does set you free, you know. And I think in whatever way you look at it, addiction is about escaping our realities or numbing the pain. And for a lot of people, you know, we hold in things that we've suffered or experienced or traumas that we've experienced. And we carry that for most of our lives. You know, if somebody was to just sit down and say, how are you feeling? Or what did you go through when you were young? And a lot of it stems from our childhood. You know, we carry these inner, young children inside us that are still afraid and still broken and still hurt, that have never been given a voice. And as adults, we can continue to go through life with never dealing with our issues, and that comes out and manifests in so many different ways. So I think talking therapy is so important, and going back to the root, really.
Yeah.
And although that is such a scary thing to do, it's understanding that in the darkness, you know, there is light, but you have to go through the darkness in order to get there, you know?
Oh my God. I just find it so amazing that, you know, not only are you running this thriving business and you're doing so brilliantly, but now you're helping other people as well. You've turned all of that into this amazing empathy and understanding of other people's stress and other people's trauma.
Yeah.
And is that now sort of your driving force, your passion?
Yeah, 100%. Yes, it's so exciting, you know? And it just feels incredible. You know, it's just gratitude. I just feel so grateful, you know? The Prince's Trust saw something in me that, you know, at the time I didn't really see, but they've nurtured me in such a way that I'm now able to kind of be confident enough to even sit with you, Fern.
Oh my God, don't be so silly. I'm just a silly Wally. I'm just happy to sit with you and chat. What would you say? I mean, there will be people listening to this who do feel like they're in a very vulnerable place in life, that they are having extremely tough time mentally, physically, emotionally, and they need people like you.
Yeah.
as I do, for you to tell your story and to know that things can be okay. Exactly. What would you say to people who feel a bit desperate and like they don't know where to turn next or what to do?
It's difficult. And I think, again, like we said before, that it's if you can just find somebody that you can speak to, you know, and it's not about if you're too afraid to go deep, and that's fine because it's scary, you know, it can be very scary. But just tell that somebody how you're feeling. Sometimes it's as simple as that, although it seems like the hardest thing in the world, just to tell somebody, you know, if somebody close to you asks you, are you okay? It's okay to say no. And tell them really what's actually going on, you know, I think it's so important.
And how do you get to a place where you don't let your past define you, whether that be in, you know, positive parts of your past or deeply, you know, distressing, like what you've experienced? How do you stop that from defining who you are today?
I just think I've come this far, and giving somebody, for instance, if I was still afraid of the person that had done what he'd done to me, I'm giving him power, effectively, you know, and it's just finding a way. It's just finding a way to kind of know that the past has no power over you anymore, you know.
But that's a real strong mindset, because, I mean, I certainly know people that go, "Yeah, but this happened," and you know, it is obviously it's a reality. It's something that happened to you, but you have managed to switch your brain into that mode where you've gone, "Yes, it happened." Mm-hmm. And I'm dealing with it, but it's not going to stop me from doing X, Y, and Z. Yeah. And I think that is, it takes great strength and great understanding and a lot of discipline, because it is a bit of a daily discipline.
It is.
I'm sure, like with recovery, it's a daily practice that you have to, like the small things I'm imagining sort of mount up to give you that strength.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's, the brain's a powerful thing, isn't it? I was looking at your book, I think it's amazing.
Oh God, thank you.
It's so amazing. And like you were saying in there about, you know, it's so easy for that kind of chatter in the brain, that negative kind of part, you know, that tells you you can't do it or you're not good enough. Mm. It's so easy to buy into that.
Yeah.
You know, and I love Eckhart Tolle, and he talks about becoming an observer of those thoughts and not attaching yourself too much to those thoughts. Mm. And it's really interesting. And so I think from listening to these books, and it's really, really helped me, you know, and now being an observer, sometimes I just have a laugh and I think, are you for real? Why are you thinking that?
Yeah, shut up.
As long as I don't do it out loud, you know, when I'm walking down the street, it's fine. But using those strategies and those techniques, effectively, that's what they are, you know, has really kind of has helped me. But also for me, it's important that it is okay to feel, and it is okay to be emotional, and that is important. So, and it's finding the balance, isn't it, between that some days you are going to have days where you don't feel that you can get out of bed, and that's okay, as long as eventually you find a way to get out and get on with it, you know.
Be kind to yourself in those moments where it's hard.
Exactly.
And how, or can you now sort of look to the future and not be terrified that something awful is going to happen? When any of us have experienced trauma on any level, of course it is hard to go, but what if I have to go through something like that again? Mm-hmm. Am I strong enough to do this again?
Yes.
How do you deal with that thought?
I think, again, that's faith. You know, you have to have faith that, you know, I've been through this much, and I'm sure I'm, you know, I may experience more. But the difference today is I have the tools that I'm better equipped now, that if something does come my way, I'm much able to kind of stop it before it goes too far, or, you know, recover in a different way today, you know. So I've got my rucksack of Louise Hay and Eckhart Tolle and your book.
I don't fit in the same category as those two, I'm afraid, but that's very sweet of you. Put it in the front pouch of that backpack. I think it's absolutely phenomenal, and you have such positive momentum now.
Yeah, exactly.
That you're just going to take over the world. You've got so many plans. And I know that you won a regional award before Christmas.
Yes.
How did that feel?
Yes, amazing, amazing, yes. So I got up and did my speech. My mum was there, my amazing ambassador, and my sponsor came as well, and my sister. It was wonderful, it was wonderful to be recognised, you know, and just to give back, really. They have done so much for me. I mean, the last 18, 19 months has been quite unbelievable, meeting the people that I've met and just having the opportunity to kind of own it and say, do you know what, this is me, this is my story, and I'm not afraid to talk about it.
And I've got some good news for you. Because you won the regional award, Prince's Trust Award, but you've also won the National Mappin and Web Young Ambassadors Award.
Oh my God!
awarded at the Prince's Trust Awards.
Shut up, go Cockney girl. Sorry, but the Cockney got out there.
Same. I'm so chuffed that I got to tell you that.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
It's amazing. Oh, I mean, beyond deserved.
That
so
is beyond.
You better
beyond.
Get a little speech ready again.
A dress.
A nice dress. Invite your gang.
Oh, my God.
On that note, because you're going to really just, beyond it, inspire so many people who are listening to this that know going through something that extreme can still lead to fulfilling your full potential and doing things that you want to do. So, again, just so much thanks to you and congratulations.
Thank you, Fern. I appreciate it so much. Thank you. It's been lovely to sit with you. Yay! You're wonderful.
Oh,
oh, what a remarkable person. Grace, thank you so, so much. To find out more about Grace's brilliant company, WorkSpa, go to workspa.co.uk. A massive thanks again to the Prince's Trust, who do such amazing work. On Tuesday, they announced their brand new Youth Index, which measures people's happiness, including the shocking finding that 35% of young people have suffered panic attacks. Find out more, just search for Prince's Trust. Next week, for our last episode in the series, we have something a little different. Stay tuned. You can do that by subscribing for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other apps. Do it now and get new episodes as soon as they're released. Oh, a massive thank you to the brilliant Grace, to the Prince's Trust, to the producer Matt Hill at Rethink Audio. And I've got to say, as we near the end of the series, such a huge thank you to you lovely lot for listening. I so appreciate it. Bye-bye.